Hello, this is Brian. Welcome to this edition of the Didcot, Abingdon and Wantage Talking Newspaper Dawn, recorded on Wednesday, the 22nd of July, 2026. You'll hear a number of news items from the Herald series. If you're listening from a memory stick, you'll also be able to listen to extra items from the RNIB magazine service. I'm the editor this week, and our readers are Lauren, Nadine, Rob and Petra. The recording technicians are John and Veronica, and in the back office we have Ruth. We start this week with an item about the possible return of the Abingdon Air Show in 2027.
Hello, this is Lauren. Popular Air Show could be returning for 2027. A popular Oxfordshire Air and County Show could be returning in 2027 with a different format. Abingdon Air and Country Show was axed this year due to circumstances beyond the control of organisers. Originally starting as a small fete in 2000, it grew into an annual staple at Dalton Barracks, the former RAF Abingdon site. However, this officially ending after its 2024 event due to financial challenges and rising operational costs. But bosses are said to be looking at options to bring some form of event back next year. In a statement, the show's organisers said there are to be changes made to the show's overall content due to the sheer expense running it and several adaptations we have had to make in recent years due to regulation changes, making it all very difficult. Not least, also losing the ability to host private aircraft to land out of our control, which is frustrating. However, a new format of this event for 2027 is being looked at, which will also feature an RAF Abingdon reunion for former RAF personnel. Abingdon Air and Country Show said further details will be decided on and revealed in the autumn. Active from 1932 to 1992, the site was transferred to the British Army, renamed Dalton Barracks, and now houses the 4 Regiment Royal Logistics Corps. The airfield is still occasionally used for military helicopter training and acts as a diversionary runway for nearby RAF Benson. Dalton Barracks aviation history was celebrated at the annual Abingdon Air and Country Show, where vintage and modern aircraft are often displayed. Entirely volunteer-run, the event raised tens of thousands of pounds for local charities, notably the Thames Valley Air Ambulance. Spectators at Abingdon have witnessed everything from historic Spitfires and Hurricanes to modern RAF heavy lifters like the C-17 Globemaster over the years. Organisers originally planned to run a scaled-back version without a formal flying display, ultimately had to cancel the June 13th event completely due to circumstances beyond their control, high costs and insurance expenses. The organisers said in May, due to circumstances beyond our control, it is with reluctance that we are having to cancel the show, which was due to be held on Saturday the 13th of June. We have tried to find ways of making this year's show viable, but it's not to be, unfortunately. All ticket holders, stall holders and participants are being contacted by email, so please stand by for the incoming email. There are approximately 30 to 40 major public and military air shows held across the UK each year between May and October. Abingdon Air Show was Oxfordshire's only display.
Hello, this is Petra. Town secures 1 million plus for social housing scheme. More than 1 million in government funding has been secured to support the delivery of new social housing in Didcot. South Oxfordshire District Council has been awarded £1,070,805 from Homes England Social and Affordable Homes Programme for its Didcot Broadway redevelopment project. The funding will help deliver a new council housing scheme at the site between 116 and 120 Broadway. Councillor Tony Wogan, Cabinet Member for Housing and Planning Development Management at South Oxfordshire District Council, said, We are hugely grateful to Homes England for generously supporting this project. This is fantastic news for Didcot and a significant step forward for a project that will deliver real benefits for our residents. Securing more than 1 million from Homes England demonstrates confidence in our plans to create high-quality council-owned homes in a sustainable town centre location. This funding, alongside the investment from the council, will make this ambitious plan reality. Didcot deserves the best, and the council is delivering this for our residents. We are particularly proud that these homes will be built to high environmental standards, supporting our ambitions to tackle climate change while providing comfortable, energy-efficient homes for future tenants. The project will see construction and refurbishment of 9 one- and two-bedroom apartments and a ground-floor community space on the cleared site. The scheme will offer homes at social rent rates. Councillor Ian Snowden, Didcot West Ward Councillor, said, "Additional external funding for Didcot is welcome, particularly where it helps deliver much-needed social housing and reduces the burden on local taxpayers. As the local ward councillor, I want to see this site brought back into productive use as soon as possible. Work is expected to begin in autumn 2026, with completion due in autumn 2027. The new homes will be built to passive house standards, prioritising energy efficiency and zero carbon living. Located in the town centre, the scheme is designed as car-free development with dedicated bicycle storage to promote sustainable travel."
Hello, this is Rob. Councils to be scrapped with counties split three ways. There are fears of a land grab for new housing with the decision to abolish Oxfordshire's councils, which currently run services including roads, planning and education. The county, city and district authorities are set to be abolished and replaced by three new councils in a local government reorganisation. The announcement was made in a ministerial statement at the House of Commons by Secretary of State for Housing Steve Reid. The plan, put forward by the Labour-run Oxford City Council, has been chosen by the Labour government, and it will see a Greater Oxford Council created, taking parishes from Charwell, South Oxfordshire and the Vale of the White Horse. There will also be a North Oxford Council with the remainder of Charwell along with West Oxfordshire, and then a Ridgeway Council taking up South Oxfordshire, the rest of the Vale of the White Horse and West Berkshire. An overarching county council will no longer exist, and all powers previously separated between it and the districts will go to the new authorities. Critics suggested this plan would be a land grab for rampant development, but the city council's cabinet says it would help achieve much-needed targets and affordable homes. The new councils will come into force in April 2028, and the existing councils will continue running until that point. There will be elections for a temporary shadow authority or authorities taking place next year. This will oversee the transition to the unitary bodies. A director for Oxfordshire's reorganisation is set to be paid a six-figure salary of between £125,350 and £135,928 from the county council payroll to manage this. Each new council is set to receive at least £900,000 from a £63 million government pot to support transition costs. The Lib Dem-run district councils and county councils had put forward different proposals for reorganisation. The districts of Charwell, South Oxfordshire, Vale of White Horse and West Oxfordshire propose an Oxford and Shires Council, comprising Charwell, Oxford City and West Oxfordshire, and a Ridgeway Council of South Oxfordshire, Vale of White Horse plus West Berkshire. The County Council wanted a single council to run Oxfordshire, incorporating all the districts and city councils into one, without the inclusion of West Berkshire. At County Cabinet, fears have been shared about Oxfordshire residents bearing the brunt of West Berkshire Council's financial distress. The local authority has secured government bailouts and exceptional financial support to avoid effective bankruptcy. Questions had been raised about whether the reorganisation should go ahead, with hopes shared by the local government association that a change of prime minister presents an opportunity to revisit some of the practicalities of the reforms.
Hello, this is Nadine. Millions set to be spent on railway. There is concern as millions raised in South Oxfordshire is to be spent on Oxford Rail rather than on projects such as the Wantage and Grove train station. The leader of the Vale of the White Horse, Greens, has said she is very worried that such a large amount of money raised in her area has been redirected towards Oxford. Sarah James added that what her area desperately needs is progress on the Wantage and Grove station. Her comments come after Oxfordshire County Council said it will spend an additional £14.5 million on forward funding for the £155 million scheme to reopen the Cowley branch line. The new funds were approved at a county cabinet meeting on Tuesday, July the 14th, and have been taken from business rates cash raised in the Science Vale, which is spread across South Oxfordshire and the Vale of White Horse. Miss James said, "The enterprise zones and the wider Science Vale bring exciting opportunities and interesting jobs, but also high housing and population growth to this rural area. We have serious congestion and transport issues locally that the Cowley branch line will do nothing to fix. What Science Vale desperately needs is real progress on a Wantage and Grove station. That actually would get traffic off the A34. I have no confidence that we will recoup these funds for our area, especially since we have just learnt that they will shortly be in different council areas. Oxfordshire County Council has said that the Cowley branch line and the Wantage and Grove station are part of the same vision. Indeed, at the recent cabinet meeting, transport boss Gareth Epps, a former independent HS2 construction commissioner, said the money to the line would enable further rail plans, including Wantage and Grove. A spokesperson for the county council clarified, "While funding for the Cowley branch line is not funding for Wantage and Grove, successful delivery of the Cowley scheme helps create the conditions that might make future rail investment more likely. This is because demonstrating such a project can succeed while will build confidence among government and the rail industry and private investors. Wantage and Grove remains a key part of our long-term rail ambitions," they added, "but it is at an earlier stage of development and requires further planning, design and business case works before it can be considered for construction funding." Long-term station campaigner Andy Holding disagreed with Miss James and said he is confident Wantage and Grove Station will receive funding. He said, "Oxfordshire County Council is investing heavily into public transport and especially rail projects, which is fantastic. However, there's still the fact that we have to convince the government on these rail projects."
Academics slammed as Alfred found in car park. Arrogant academics have been slammed as Oxfordshire's King Alfred is found in a car park. Researchers believe they have identified the long-lost burial site of Alfred the Great, the 9th century monarch celebrated as the original King of England, who fought against the Vikings invasions. Born in Wantage, he is heavily associated with Oxfordshire, with his birthplace hosting an annual festival in his honour and having a statue of him in its marketplace. Historical researcher Graham Phillips now claims to have located the king's remains after 13-year investigation, pinpointing a car park in Winchester as the likely burial site. just 20 yards from a scenic garden where Alfred was once thought to have been buried. But after evidence was presented to academics at the University of Winchester archaeology team, the bid to excavate the area and recover the bones was shut down, it has been claimed. Matt Everett of Dragonfly Films, which is behind the revelations, said it was the same thing for a long time with the woman who fought to excavate the car park for Richard III. She was someone from outside mainstream academics. Her and Graham are respected researchers in their communities, but they are not academics. That poor lady suffered a lot of ridicule until she was proven right. We don't want the country to make the same mistake here. Mr. Everett claims their request for a preliminary ground penetrating radar, GPR, survey and further excavation was dismissed by Winchester University. He said they didn't properly look at them or read what I gave them properly. They just said this leads to a dead end. He added, they could have sent a bunch of students to scan the ground to look for anomalies. It would be minimal effort and little to no hassle with no damage done, but they have just shut it down. He believes academic arrogance is to blame for the lack of engagement. Alfred the Great died in 899 and was originally buried in Winchester Cathedral. His remains were later moved to Hyde Abbey, which was destroyed during the dissolution of the monasteries in 1539.
Customers give butchers warm welcome. Butcher Martin Brown and his staff have been very busy since opening his new shop in Abingdon. There were long queues on the opening day earlier this month, and staff have been working hard ever since. The town has not had a traditional butcher's shop for many years, and customers have been giving it a warm welcome. Mr. Brown said, "It's been really busy. We keep having to make more sausages each day to keep up with the growing demand. I think people in the town have been missing having a traditional butcher's shop. They have been crying out for it." Some customers have switched from buying their meat in the local supermarkets to buying it at Brown's instead. One customer on Saturday bought steaks and other meat costing about £76. Following the opening weekend, Mr. Brown posted on Facebook, "To every single customer who visited us over the opening weekend, thank you for your patience while we found our feet. We were completely blown away by the queues and support."
Bid to save towns under threat magazine. A group of volunteers have launched a bid to save an Oxfordshire town magazine that has been running for 64 years before it shut down just 6 months ago. Window on Wallingford has been at the heart of the South Oxfordshire town since 1962, sharing news and information on what's going on with locals for free. Run solely by volunteers, support dwindled in recent years, and by February, the production of the monthly magazine had fallen on the shoulders of a single person. The lack of a magazine for the last 6 months has led to a group of volunteers to organise themselves into a new committee, promising to relaunch the valued resource, beginning with a fundraising campaign to get it off the ground. One of the volunteers, internal communications manager Dean Valla, 48, said the group plans to bring a vibrant new look and feel to the newsletter. They're hoping to raise £1,500 to get it back up and running and are being supported by the Wallingford for All CIC, which is a non-profit community interest company.
Uncertain future over post office. The future of Didcot's main post office branch remains uncertain, according to the latest update from its managers. Owner of high street business T.G. Jones, Medella Capital, which bought out the high street branches of long-standing brand W.H. Smith last year, has embarked on a huge restructuring which will see up to 150 shops close. Medella blamed challenging retail conditions on the changes and adhering to approve the reconstructing plans in the High Court at the end of June, heard the business was highly distressed. If the former W.H. Smith in Broadway, Didcot, closed, it would leave the town centre without a post office branch. A post office spokesman said it was trying to make plans in advance of the possible closure of the T.G. Jones branch. The spokesperson said she wanted to emphasise that no decision had yet been made regarding the T.G. Jones in Broadway. She added, "We fully recognise the challenging trading conditions that T.G. Jones and many other high street retailers are facing at the moment. The T.G. Jones restructuring plan has recently been approved by the court, and T.G. Jones is now discussing lease terms with its landlords. We wish to emphasise that no decision has been made regarding Didcot. We recently took the proactive step of advertising the opportunity to express an interest in operating a post office branch in advance of the court outcome and any decisions by landlords, including Didcot. This is to ensure that should a branch need to close, we are in the strongest possible position to minimise disruption to customers by identifying a replacement operator as quickly as possible. Interest has been expressed to operate a replacement for Didcot if the need arises." Ollie Glover, Liberal Democrat MP for Didcot and Wantage, said if T.G. Jones in Broadway does close, it would leave 37,000 residents of the town and others in nearby villages relying on just one post office branch in Georgetown. It would also follow the controversial closure of East Hagbourne Post Office due to the resignation of the postmaster in February. Mr. Glover said earlier, not only would the post office face a significant increase in demand, but residents would also lose access to vital services such as passport applications, DVLA renewals, and identity verification services, which are not available at this branch. "I have written to Post Office Limited outlining the impact these proposed changes would have on the community and the lack of nearby accessible alternative services." Mr. Glover has written to Blair MacDonald, Minister for Small Businesses, about the closure of the East Hagbourne branch. He raised concerns following the government's response to a petition, with the government defending the closure by pointing to nearby alternatives.
Famous Ale is on the move following Spanish buyout. Beer once brewed in Abingdon will be brewed in Bedford from next year. In a surprise move, the old Speckled Hen brands that originated at Moorland Brewery in Abingdon have been sold by Green King to Dam UK, the British arm of Barcelona-based independent family brewer S.A. Dam of Estrella Dam fame. Old Speckled Hen and its spin-off brands, Old Golden Hen, Old Crafty Hen, Old Master Hen and low-alcohol Old Speckled Hen, will continue to be brewed by GK at Bury St Edmunds until June next year. Then they will move to Eagle Brewery in Bedford, where Dam operates the former Charles Wells Brewery. Nick McKenzie, CEO of Green King, said, "We are proud to have built Old Speckled Hen into one of the nation's favourite ales over the past 25 years and are delighted to have secured a partner in Estrella Dam who will continue to brew the ales in the UK. Pub experts, including Dave Richardson of Oxford Camera, Campaign for Real Ale, are now assessing why Green King decided to sell such a famous brand, having acquired it in 1999 from Moorland, which it closed down the following year. It is still widely available in GK's Oxfordshire pubs and is one of the three GK brands in the top 10 cascales by sales volume in 2025, alongside Abbott and IPA. Green King has now announced a new strategy to concentrate on an on-trade sales via pubs."
Hotel sits empty, a decade it closed. A community has been left frustrated as an eyesore hotel, which has sat derelict for more than a decade, remains untouched. Concerns have been raised as the Upper Reaches Hotel off Thames Street, next to Abingdon Bridge, has sat empty since its 2015 closure. The building has become a hotspot for vandalism and antisocial behaviour over the years, with numerous incidents reported, and despite of efforts to tidy up the site, it remains an eyesore close to one of the main entrance points to the town. Last summer, councillors called for action to bring forward redevelopment plans for the area, but despite a whole year having passed since then, nothing has changed. The freehold of the site is owned by Vale of Whitehorse District Council, but since 2004, the lease has been held by Contemporary Hotels Limited. In 2023, hotel owner Ambar Paul announced proposals to redevelop the site. He said he was prepared to spend $6 million, but only if he was granted the freehold. One possibility would be a new 50-room hotel. Oliver Forder, chairman of the Vale Council, who is also a town councillor, said attempts have been made to contact Mr. Paul during the past 12 months. He added, "We are not getting a response from him. It is extraordinarily frustrating. He is the person who has the lease, and there is no break clause in it. He is not negotiating with us. We want to find a solution that is acceptable to the public, the council, the leaseholder." Councillors have been active in pressing officers to seek a solution. It's a constant topic of conversation. Mr. Paul, who is based in London, closed the Upper Reaches Hotel because it was losing £100,000 a year. He's required to pay £60,000 to £80,000 a year to keep the site secure, and maintenance work was carried out in 2024. Conservationists, the Friends of Abingdon Civic Society, have repeatedly lobbied the council for progress of the issue, together with local residents. A spokesman for the group said last year, after the site had been derelict for a decade, "Abingdon has had to put up with this eyesore on its doorstep for more than 10 years now. The Friends are calling on Contemporary Hotels and the Vale of Whitehorse District Council to bring the situation to a speedy end. Contemporary Hotels should either bring forward their long-promised redevelopment plans or give up the lease for development by someone else. The council should make maximum use of the powers available under the lease and under statutory provisions to have the site kept in a better state of repair and protect the value of this public-owned asset." The group added, "The presence of such an eyesore at the entrance to the town on the riverside makes Abingdon look unloved. The Vale Council and the Friends Group have been contacted for further comment."
Long-running biker meet in complaint. Oxfordshire's biggest and longest-running weekly biker meeting, held at a long-standing cafe near Wallingford, has been hit with a complaint through the police on noise and reckless riding. H Cafe in Oxford Road, Beaconsfield, has hosted one of the county's most popular meets for motorcyclists every Monday during the summer for the last 15 years. But Thames Valley Police has issued a notice describing numerous reports from the people who live near the cafe on Monday evenings, including reports of excessive speed, aggressive riding behaviour and noise that is affecting their quality of life. A spokesman for the police said, "Whilst the vast majority of motorcyclists ride responsibly, a small number of individuals can have a significant impact on local communities. Where offences or antisocial riding are identified, Thames Valley Police will continue to carry out enforcement activity. Our aim is not to prevent people from meeting at H Cafe or enjoying motorcycling. Rather, we are asking everyone to work together to ensure that riders and local residents can coexist respectfully." Shortly before the season opened for the weekly bike nights at the cafe at the end of March this year, long-time owner Richard Allen issued a statement asking for similar consideration. He wrote, "Last season, a small number of thoughtless individuals caused problems at our Monday meets with antisocial behaviour and reckless riding. Their actions put people at risk and damaged the reputation of our cafe and community and threatened the jobs of my amazing staff. This season, there'll be zero tolerance for this behaviour." It comes as the latest in a long social media campaign which began after the very first Harley-Davidson meet took place in April 2011, attended by more than 3,000 people. The cafe hosts multiple fundraisers for emergency services every year, posts about riding safety and considerately, and even organises annual biker charity runs taking Easter eggs to Oxford Children's Hospital. Commenting on Thames Valley Police's post about the cafe, one person said, "I've ridden for as long as I can remember, and I love to get out on the bikes when I can. Unfortunately, there will always be a minority that will speed excessively and ride aggressively. I really hope the minority support your request." One Wallingford local said, "I'm not against your meetups in one location, but please think about others when travelling through. I have elderly neighbours who've opened their doors to give what they can on occasions, and I praise them, but they shouldn't have to." But another rider wanted to encourage more social cohesion between the groups and added, "Monday night is bike night, so residents should be aware there'll be a high number of bikes on that night."
Private school allowed major expansion on 800 acre estate. A private school is allowed to carry out a major expansion on its 800 acre estate. Two new paddle tennis courts are being planned at Radley College near Abingdon as pupils get hooked on the game. Paddle tennis is the fastest growing sport in the world right now, with figures from the Lawn Tennis Association showing more than 400,000 people were playing the sport in the UK last year. Close to 1 million people in the UK play the sport now. Vale of Whitehorse District Council has agreed to the planning application put forward by Radley College. A Radley spokeswoman said, "We are delighted that planning permission has been granted for two new paddle courts at Radley College." The college's paddle society was originally set up by a sixth former and has become increasingly popular with our boys, who regularly organise matches and travel to one another's venues to play. Having two courts at the college will allow more pupils to take part in one of the world's fastest growing sports. We expect the proposed paddle courts to be ready for use by the end of 2026. Radley College is set among 800 acres, and the new courts will be made within the northern part of the campus within the athletic track. The site forms part of a wider complex of Radley College sports facilities, comprising a hockey pitch and athletics track, as well as a rowing bank, strength and conditioning building, and tennis courts. Council Planning Officer Nathaniel Ramsey granted planning permission with his report to say that it must be built within 3 years. No objections from neighbours were received by the council. He added, "The courts are a significant distance from the nearest residential occupier, such that there will be no harm to the amenity of any neighbouring occupier from the courts themselves. The use of the courts and the flood lighting has the potential to harm neighbours. The council's environmental health officer is satisfied that the light spillage diagram shows that the floodlights will not harm neighbouring occupiers. They have requested additional information regarding the impact in terms of noise. Whilst it is accepted that paddle courts have the potential to cause noise, given noise is generated when the ball is hit and the ball hits the glass fencing which surrounds the courts and players communicate. The nearest dwellings are a significant distance from the proposed courts, and these are all occupied by the college and over-occupied by staff members. This distance reduces potential impacts, and given the dwellings are occupied by staff members, the potential for harm is further reduced. He added, the proposed development is supported in principle and is not appropriate development, is not inappropriate development in the Green Belt.
Hello, this is Brian again with a notice board followed by some more news items. We've no death to announce this week, but we do have a birthday. Mrs. Carol of Wantage celebrates her birthday on July the 24th. We all wish her a lovely day. We now have some items from history. On this day, items from history. So in 1298, the English used longbows to decisive effect when they defeated the Scots at the Battle of Falkirk. In 1376, perhaps a slightly better known item, the mass abduction of children from the town of Hamelin by the Pied Piper supposedly took place, according to legend. In 1812, the Battle of Salamanca took place in western Spain, in which the Duke of Wellington was victorious over the French in the Peninsular War. In 1933, Wally Post, one-eyed pioneer aviator, became the first person to fly solo around the world. In 1934, movie-loving gangster John Dillinger, public enemy number one, was shot dead by federal agents outside the Biograph Cinema in Chicago. In 1946, after a failed wheat harvest, bread was rationed in Britain. In 1986, MPs voted to abolish the cane in state schools. And finally, in 2013, the Duchess of Cambridge gave birth to her first child, Prince George. After all that, we now start the second half with a nostalgia piece from Emma Brennan about holiday postcards.
Before selfies, holiday bragging came by post. Emma fondly recalls the cheerful messages that painted a rosier picture than reality ever quite managed. This time of year, my social media accounts are flooded with pictures of friends lounging near swimming pools in sun-drenched destinations, leaving nobody in any doubt that they are having a great holiday somewhere warm. Their posts, which are often rapidly updated, include everything from adventurous hikes to photos of what they are eating for dinner. That's become the way of things nowadays. You can snap a selfie, type a quick message, and send it to your friends and family in an instant. And if that's not enough, you can get immediate endorsement by means of a virtual thumbs up. Given that I personally think it foolhardy to broadcast your absence from home on social media, it got me thinking about the sensible alternatives of yesteryear. I came to the conclusion that postcards were our way of letting our loved ones know we were having a good time. As with many things in life these days, the convenience of social media has eclipsed the good old-fashioned postcard, making it a rarity to receive a physical holiday communication in the post. But in their heyday, during the Edwardian era, around 800 million postcards were sent in Britain each year. Commissioned by the British Post Office, postcards were introduced to the UK in 1870. They included an imprinted halfpenny stamp, which covered the price of postage, printed on one side only to allow the message to be printed on the other side, and costing half the price of sending a letter. Postcards enabled concise correspondence without the formality or expense. Whilst most of us associate postcards with pictures, illustrated postcards produced by private publishers were not accepted by the post office until 1894. In these early designs, one whole side of the card was used for the address and the stamp, with an ultra-concise message squeezed alongside the picture. During the First World War, Postcards provided a vital means of communication for troops, taking just 2 days to get from Britain to the front line. However, to prevent possible information leaks, soldiers' postcards were censored and had their captions crossed out to hide the location of the sender. For my family, and probably most in the UK, postcards are synonymous with the seaside. The British seaside holiday became cheaper and more accessible with the expansion of the Victorian railways, and postcard producers were quick to capitalise. Portrait photographer James Bamforth started producing postcards in 1903 and cashed in on the seaside market eventually, achieving notoriety for their saucy illustrated designs. Although we might deem these images amusing by today's standards, in the early 1900s, censorship boards were established to decide if a postcard was suitable for sale. Looking back, we received multiple postcards during the summer from family and friends, even though most had travelled less than an hour to their holiday destination. But the opportunity to tell us what a lovely time they were having was too good to miss. We always laughed when my aunt wrote on her postcards, "Boiling hot on the beaches," when we knew the reality was it had been foggy and overcast, given that they were less than 30 miles away. But whatever the weather, the pictures on the postcards always showed the destination in all its glory, which I'm not saying that postcards didn't have their drawbacks. For example, my mum used to source stamp and send hers minutes after we'd arrived on holiday in order to ensure that they made it home before us. Sometimes they would mysteriously get waylaid in the post and arrive 2 weeks after our holiday with a distant memory. On one occasion, a former boyfriend went on to safari to Africa and I didn't hear from him for 3 weeks. "I sent you a postcard," he protested, when I complained about the lack of communication. Said postcard arrived a full 3 weeks after he'd returned and my annoyance had long since abated. It was one of those occasions when a brief message on social media would have been welcome, just to confirm he hadn't been eaten by a lion. But whenever a postcard eventually arrived, there was something special about receiving a physical memento which made you feel as if you had shared the experience in some small way with the holidaymaker. As a child, I thought it odd that you wrote a message on the back of the postcard which could be read by the postman, any other person who handled it en route, but by comparison, the public nature of social media these days, I guess it seems positively private. For me, there is also the tangible nature of a physical postcard which eclipses the transience of any social media post.
Scrap metal transformed into giant blooms. Huge metal sunflowers and daffodils made from old scrap are surprising visitors at Farmer Gow's near Farringdon. The towering flowers are part of a growing display of upcycled art designed to blend sustainability with creativity. Anne Gow, who runs the farm, said, "These days farms have to work hard at reinventing themselves. Our farm is situated in such attractive countryside, and I want everything we do to respect this and reflect this." The farm enlisted the help of artist blacksmith Bruce Garside to bring Ms. Gow's vision to life. Ms. Gow added, "Bruce has done a wonderful job of turning discarded metal into stunning visitor features. Our new metal petals sit comfortably and beautifully along our established natural attractions. I have always thought that there is a very fine line between nature and art, and here at Farmer Gow's, I hope that line has just got even finer." Mr. Garside, who has more than 30 years of experience, was the last apprentice blacksmith trained at Hambledon Village Forge. He worked closely with a farm team to design and build the giant sculptures using scrap metal collected over the years.
Care home residents grow wildlife haven. Residents at a care home have helped to create a vibrant wildlife garden that has become a source of pride and connection. The project began in March at Bridge House Care Home in Abingdon, where residents transformed part of the grounds into a sustainable, wildlife-friendly space designed to attract pollinators and encourage biodiversity. Rosemary, a resident at the home, said, "I've enjoyed planting flowers and watching everything grow. It's lovely to spend time outside and see the garden becoming more colourful each week. I feel very proud of it, and I love showing it to my daughter and grandchildren when they visit. They're always very impressed by how much we've done." The garden features a butterfly and bee section, wildflowers and insect habitats crafted by the residents at the home's repair cafe. It also includes an accessible path, seating areas and raised beds, ensuring all residents can take part.
Starbucks to close its cafe in September, say staff. American coffee shop chain Starbucks is to close its cafe in Abingdon Marketplace, according to staff. The Seattle-based coffee shop, Giant, opened its 60-seat new cafe in the town's marketplace in December 2021. Now it is understood that the branch is expected to close in September. One member of staff said, "Yes, we are closing in September. It's the talk of the town. I don't know the reasons. There are a lot of independent cafes in Abingdon." When Starbucks opened in Abingdon, the branch manager at the time, Wayne McHugh, said he was delighted with the positive reception from people in the town. He said it's been amazing. People were queuing outside at 9 a.m. waiting to come in. "I know it's competitive here. I've been round all Abingdon's coffee shops. But I do think Starbucks can add something very positive. It's a big brand name, but we do want to become part of the community." The town's Starbucks is surrounded by other cafes, including independents. There is a branch of Costa in the marketplace, together with Java and RAR, and Missing Bean, a short distance away in Sturt Street, recently celebrated its 5th birthday. A member of staff at R&R said, "We've been told Starbucks is closing. Throwing Buns is a cafe on the opposite side of the marketplace, close to the town museum. And there are other cafes throughout the town, including those in High Street and Bar Street." Abingdon has a strong claim to being the oldest continuously inhabited town in England. There are other Starbucks coffee shops across Oxfordshire. The chain has cafes in Oxford, Bicester and Banbury, and at Welcome Break Oxford services at Junction 8A of the M40 at Waterstock and at the Pear Tree Interchange in North Oxford. A year ago, Pablo Lounge, a restaurant bar on the corner of Berry Street Precinct, close to Market Place, closed, and so far nothing has replaced. The town's NatWest Bank branch in Market Place also closed last year. The Starbucks chain operates more than 1,300 cafes across the UK. The chain pledged to open another 500 coffee houses in the UK in the next 5 years, with 75 new cafes opening this year. Starbucks has been asked to comment.
Summer Fete supports Towns Museum. A Summer Fete was held to support the work of a county museum. The event at the Vale and Downland Museum in Wantage included a variety of activities from Splat the Rat to new craft materials, a tombola to a children's bookstall, with attendees encouraged to buy a ticket for the raffle. All proceeds from the event, including the raffle, went directly to support the museum, which is well known in the local community. Its aim is to celebrate and interpret the human and natural history of the area for visitors, tourists and the local population. Earlier this year, manager of the Vale and Downland Museum, Lisa Gale, said the museum was having funding issues. She said, "We encourage local businesses to consider partnering with the museum."
Back in the day, perms were big business. My column on perms prompted a good response from other fans of curly locks. Our reader picture was sent in by Rosemary Story. Her mother, Beatrice Twigg, born in 1909, was a hairdresser from the time she left school and had her own salon in London. Rosemary told me, when she retired, the Science Museum in London collected the permanent waving machine for its display. Before it was collected, Mum used the machine and curlers on my hair so we could take photographs to show how everything was used. The photographs were taken 57 years ago. The machine was made by iCall. The next newer machine was called the Madison Magic. Then cold perms came in, for which no machines were used. Paul Oscroft trained as a hairdresser in the late 60s at a salon called Bernard of Mayfair in the centre of Birmingham and had his own salon in the 70s. In the 1980s, he became technical trainer for Weller, teaching hairdressers how to perm. Paul said, "When I had my own salon in the 1970s, perming was big business and I had lots of men and women booking in for a perm. In the 1980s, one of the trends was using molten brown sponge rollers to perm with. I still remember the smell of perm lotion when you entered a salon, which they don't smell of any longer."
Dance school claim multiple cup medals. An Oxfordshire dance school has won multiple medals at the World Cup in Dublin. American Dance School, based in Wantage, took 16 dancers aged 8 to 18 to the Dance World Cup in Dublin and brought back 4 bronze medals for Team England. Sam Bridle won one in the jazz solo category, while also coming 7th for his contemporary solo. Ava Tatum Hale and Holly Helm for their street duet, and Jossie Nuzinski for his showstopper solo. The school also placed highly in the children's street trio category, with Kayleanne Duryea's Sophie Aram and Elsie Margerison securing 8th in the world. In addition, 8-year-old Alba managed to finish in the top half of her section while competing against dancers up to the age of 25. Gillian Clipsom of the school said, "Witnessing the stand of this competition, to even finish in the top half of our enormous categories was something to be immensely proud about. But to walk away with 4 gold medals is something I've not yet digested."
Cubs enjoy visit to the railway centre. A pack of cubs and their leaders enjoyed a visit to Didcot Railway Centre. The popular steam train, Steam Rail Heritage Centre, was visited by the first Harwell cubs for a family picnic. There were about 50 cubs and their parents attending the visit earlier this month. Jane Haydendrish, the Railway Centre's Education Engagement Officer, said, "As a part of the engine shed roof funding project, we needed to broaden our community involvement, and offering out our centre after hours seemed a good way to do this. We have the space to allow brownies, cubs, scouts and other like groups to run around in a safe, enclosed area. The cubs and their families gathered at the picnic area, close to the play train, for the children to climb over."
Town Splash Pad reopened just in time for holidays. The Splash Pad in Wantage has finally reopened after months of being closed unexpectedly for urgent repairs, just in time for the first day of the school summer holidays. The popular water park in Manor Park Memorial Gardens, Wantage, officially reopened on Friday, July the 17th, following an unexpected closure during the first months of summer. Safety inspectors carried out in May identified significant damage to the surfacing of the splash pad, meaning it was not safe for children to use. Vale of the Whitehorse District Council said shutting the play area was a necessary decision, but they're pleased the splash pad is now open, just in time for the school summer holidays. A spokesperson said, "We appreciate that this was disappointing, particularly with warmer weather we have experienced so far this summer. However, The safety of children and all visitors is our top priority, and we cannot reopen the facility until it is safe to do so. Our aim is that the splash pad will be available for the entire school summer holidays when it is traditionally used the most. The council added that contractors began the works last month and have repaired the surface and tested the mechanical parts of the splash pad to ensure it was working correctly. It assured locals that the facility was reopened as soon as it was safe to do so.
Pirate set for swashbuckling show. A swashbuckling adventure takes the stage in Wantage this summer. Gilbert and Sullivan's classic comedy, The Pirates of Penzance, is being brought to life by King Alfred's Academy Centre Side. Brought by Amigos Theatre, the amateur production is full of wit, romance and catchy songs. The cast features 17 performers from the area, backed by a 12-strong orchestra of local musicians. Joshua McFarlane plays the lead role of Frederick. There will be 4 performances starting on Thursday, July the 23rd, with shows each evening at 7:30 p.m. and a matinee on Saturday, July the 25th at 2:30 p.m. Amigos Theatre was founded in 2012 and has staged 24 productions for audiences, totaling more than 6,500 people. Tickets start at £14 plus booking fee. Visit amigostheatre.com.
Students mark the end of an era with a prom. Pupils at a Didcot school mark the end of an era with a sparkling prom night. Year 11 leavers from Aureus School gathered at Milton House Hotel for the celebration, arriving in style in vehicles ranging from classic and vintage motors to sports cars under the theme A Night Under the Stars. Hannah Powell, assistant head teacher at Aureus School, said, "I feel that the prom is a rite of passage when you reach the end of Year 11 and is also an event that has been the topic of many conversations throughout the year. This has been a bubbly, conscientious group, and I hope their hard work pays off when they receive their exam results later in the summer." The evening featured a disco, drinks and a buffet.
Pub named finalist in prestigious awards. The owner of a family-run pub in Wallingford said she was speechless at the recognition the business received from the industry's most prestigious UK awards. Award-winning pub, The Dolphin, in St Mary Street, Wallingford, has been named as a finalist in the Great British Pub Awards 2026. The awards, described as the Oscars of the pub industry, highlight its very best boozers in Britain and select their shortlist across 16 categories from an incredible number of top-quality entries. The Dolphin has been shortlisted as one of 6 pubs under the Best Green King Pub category. Emma Cox, landlady, said, "To even be named as a finalist is something we're genuinely speechless about. We pour everything we've got into this pub, and we have that, and to have that recognised on a national stage is an incredible feeling. This is for our amazing team and every one of you who has supported us, filled the bar, cheered at the football, eaten with us, laughed with us, and made the Dolphin what it is. Whatever happens next, we'll be celebrating this one. Thank you for being part of our journey."
That's the last news item for this week. I thank the Herald Series and other sources for the items we've used, and thank John, Veronica, Ruth and the readers for their time. If you have any comments to make on this production or anything else, please phone the Dawn Secretary, Karen, on 07939265517. We hope you enjoyed listening to this newspaper. And remember, there are extra items at the end of this recording. Please put the memory stick back in the pouch and post back to us for next week. If you're returning more than one memory stick, please put them in the same pouch. Goodbye, keep safe and well, and thank you for listening.